Today on Movie Wallets, we talk about the art of self-defense and the farewell.
It's time for Movie Wallers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And here's Dee as well.
Movie Wallers is your weekly list of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or at the back of the airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Hello, hello.
Greetings.
Hello.
It's finally cooled down.
Yes.
It's been pretty muggy. Summer suddenly arrived in San Diego. Like, it was
great,
not
great,
summer.
Great. Rain. Humid.
Yeah. Which is a relative thing for those of us listening in other parts of the country.
Know.
But it's
we
been pretty
complain.
Sticky.
Yeah.
I think there have been all sorts of... Yasti, you had a bit of a diatribe about global warming the other day from Alaska. And I'm like, there's a change in the air. There's something
there's
afoot.
Definitely a change
there's
in the
records
air.
Being set. I mean, I don't want to get too political. But
no, the record's been set across Europe. For the highest temperature ever recorded
ever.
In history. Yeah.
So there's something going on. But anyway, we've been...
The end is nigh.
Watch movies.
Yes.
Wear shorts.
Yes.
Wear shorts and watch movies. Yes. Eat ice cream.
Yes.
Okay, we've got a couple of movies to talk about. One of which, in fact, both of which I'm really excited to kind of talk about. The Art of Self-Defense and Farewell. But before we do that, we wanted to do our segment of I can't find anything to watch on VOD. And this
and
is
shame
a
on
reminder.
You if you can't. There's so much content.
There's so much.
No, but it's overwhelming.
It is overwhelming.
And I just had that experience right now when I was trying to come up with my pick. I was shuffling through all of these thousands
like
of options. And thinking...
There's so much new content. I'm like, oh, I should watch this. I should watch that. There's no time.
It is actually hard to keep up with it all. So
this
is our service to you.
Yes.
So that you don't have to shuffle through thousands of options. You can pick one of these three movies and have a good time. So
We haven't seen all thousands of those movies, but the ones we have seen, we can recommend with our hands on our hearts.
Well, we've seen more than most as a result of this I guess it's a job movie wallet. So yes. What is in your queues?
So I'm going back in time a little bit and I'm picking The Informant.
Oh,
which is
Matt
the
Damon.
Matt Damon movie.
Yes.
And it's actually directed by
Soderbergh,
yeah. And I just love when Matt Damon plays this type of character. He does this so well. And it's about basically a guy who works in the agricultural industry. It's based on a true story. And he becomes a whistleblower. And the way it's done is a little bit tongue-in-cheek. It's very Coen Brothers-esque. It's quirky. It's funny. It's dark. It's scary. It's all of those things. And it's really well put together and very entertaining.
Yeah. And Matt Damon has been quiet for a while, but
he has
two movies coming out this year. Something called Ford versus Ferrari, which doesn't sound very
obvious. Joe's about to have an orgasm any second right now.
I think it's about Formula One, right? The specific season.
It's about
okay.
Formula One. And then the other movie is called The Last Duel, and it's a historical movie where, believe it or not, Matt Damon is reteamed with Ben Affleck as historical characters, King Charles VI, and it's directed by Ridley Scott.
How interesting.
Go figure, yeah.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah,
no, The Informant's a great pick there, yeah. Rashmi, there. That was super fun. Yasni, what you
and
got?
I'm going to recommend an old classic, incontestably a classic. It's one of Hitchcock's most eye candy movies, and it's To Catch a Thief. And it stars the incomparable Grace Kelly along with Cary Grant as they're driving around south of France, you know, Monaco, all these wonderful places.
I still haven't watched it. I'm going to watch
it. It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's a cat and mouse game. It's very obvious in the movie. It's one of those rare movies where Hitchcock puts all his cards on the table. It's very obvious from the very start that Cary Grant is a thief. And he's trying to do a con. But just to watch him kind of go through these hoops one after the other, you know, as the law is on his tail. It's just beautiful. It really is a piffle of a movie. It doesn't amount to much, but it's just an excuse to see beautiful people in beautiful locations in the late 50s. It's like a rich dessert that you get to consume all at once. Can't recommend it enough. It's in beautiful Technicolor. to catch a thief.
That sounds awesome. Yeah, I need to catch up on my Hitchcock, because I you know where I watch Hitchcock more than anywhere at the moment? On the plane.
On YouTube?
Yeah.
They have, you know, the
classics.
United always has like a section of classics. I tend to fly United. And I've watched a couple of like really great Hitchcock movies there. And this one has never floated up on that list. So must do that. And then my pick for streaming for this week is the movie Chappaquiddick.
Which, I never saw that.
Ah, so okay.
With
so
Jason Clarke.
Yes, indeed. It's the story of Ted Kennedy and the kind of infamous incident where he was involved in the death of a young woman. He was involved in the event where there was a car accident and somebody died. And he was accused and really kind of left the scene, and all of the events and the politics that happened around that time, when really the Kennedys were at the peak of their power politically, influentially. So I didn't really know the details of the story before seeing this movie. Rashmi, I know, has something of an obsession with the Kennedy and the Kennedy story, so you kind of knew what this was about going in. But this is a very, very well executed movie. It's tense. I think it doesn't play too judgy with the facts
it's
of the
tense,
case.
But it's dramatic, but it's not drama.
Sure, yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. It's very dramatic, but it doesn't get caught up in the drama tropes of murder's happened or a death has happened and now what's going to happen. It's very even paced.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Very well paced.
Yeah.
And well acted.
Incredibly well acted. And I feel like this movie really was lost in the shuffle a little bit last year, because I think the material, the handling of the material, the execution of the movie really put it up. I even forgot about it towards the end of the year, because I think it lay very high in my esteem. So I think it's a movie that you need to check out. It's so well done, and whatever your
and
political.
Kate Mara is excellent.
Yes, that's right.
Kate
Gosh, Mara's I forgot she was in this too.
This.
Yeah.
So I haven't seen the movie. Is the whole movie an attempt to exonerate him, or does it?
I don't think it is or isn't.
That's okay. What I liked about it. I don't think it has a specific point of view. I think it kind of lays out the facts as they happened and kind of lets you judge history, right? So I think it goes into the details of the event, it goes into what happened afterwards, and really kind of leaves it up to the viewer as to how to, you know, convict or not convict Ted Kennedy in one's own mind. I came away with a certain opinion, and I think Rashmi, as we were discussing it on the way home, we almost landed in different camps on that. So that's again to me the mark of a very accomplished script, is where it can avoid passing judgment on its character, and this one does that. So three movies are, Rashmi, yours was
The Informant,
To Catch a Thief,
and Chappaquiddick. Okay, let's then jump into the review section of the podcast. So we have The Art of Self-Defense and Farewell, or The Farewell.
The Farewell.
The Farewell. Why did I call it Farewell? The Farewell.
Are you consciously saying goodbye to us? Yeah.
Clearly.
Farewell, Yasti. Farewell, Farewell, Rashmi. Farewell, Joe.
So where would you like to start?
The Art of Self-Defense.
Go for it.
Because I've been dying to speak about this one to you both. Okay, so I think all I want to say about this is directed and written by Riley Stearns, who hasn't actually done that much. I think he's done one other movie that I hadn't heard of called Faults. But this is a man is attacked at random on the street, and he basically enlists at a local dojo karate club, which is led by a charismatic and mysterious sensei, in an effort to learn how to defend himself. So this stars Jesse Eisenberg, Alessandro Nivola as the sensei, and Imogen Poots amongst a few others. So again, I have been dying to speak about this one to you both. So Yazdi, kick us off. What did you think of The Art of Self-Defense, and have you booked your first karate class?
I love this movie. I think it's not for everyone, but for whom it is, it's tailor-made. I think this movie is an instant cult classic. I think years from now, people are going to be watching it in midnight screenings. I like that it's so willfully odd, and there is a very deadpan sensibility to the whole movie. And the entire movie, it's almost like the movie Out. The movie Us. Where there's a whole bunch of stuff happening on the surface, and then there's all this stuff happening underneath. And I think there's been a lot written about this movie, and rightfully so. And I can't wait to discuss it more with all of you. But I think the most obvious explanation for the movie is that it's a withering critique of toxic masculinity and how that's cyclical, and how, you know, the concept of toxic masculinity preys on the weakest and kind of makes them kind of the biggest proponents of that. But I think the movie is actually more than that, and it has so much playing. I mean, it's interesting that it's directed by Riley Stearns, because it kind of reminded me of Boots Riley, who last year did Sorry to Bother You is what he did. It's in that same, it has that same sensibility. It's like odd, weird things happening.
Not as obvious though.
The only other thing I want to say is the movie gets very dark very quickly, but it's just committed to its cause, and it kind of sees it through in that particular fashion. And I love this movie.
Joe, should we predict what Joe's going to say?
Joe likes it.
No, I don't know.
He has these right. Gosh, where do I start with this one? Kind of like the movie, I guess I'll start in the obvious place, which, you know, on the face of it, this movie starts as something that it and ends up in a completely different location, right? So
it's like a lot of critiques have said it's like a combination of Fight Club and The Office, and I can totally see it.
That's actually the perfect blend, because I was going to go with Fight Club initially, but it's so much darker and more bizarre. I mean, I struggle with the movie being any kind of commentary on anything. I feel like, for me at least, it was disturbing for the shock factor of being disturbing, right? So it takes its, you know, again, I'm the one of the three of us that tends to be very literal about, you know, the story that's playing out in front of me, and I don't tend to relate it to anything outside of that particular universe. So when things start to take a bizarre turn for the worst, and I kind of settled into the fact that this wasn't going to be what I thought it was going to be, I took it as a very kind of sickly dark comedy as opposed to anything with a deeper meaning. But nonetheless, as a sickly dark and twisted comedy, it worked wonderfully well. It was much less annoying than last year's Sorry to Bother You. I think it was a bit more restrained in the way it handled the material, even though the movie went to some really bonkers places. But I liked it very much. I mean, it was, as a comedy, it worked for me. It really shocked me and made me laugh. And yeah, I liked it. Go on, Rashmi.
Okay, yay. What a great movie. I love this. This is so odd and quirky with a strange cadence. And ultimately, it feels like a fable of sorts, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of efficient in the way that it comes in, does its thing. It's just over 90 minutes, I think. And Jesse Eisenberg is so perfectly cast. I can't think that this movie would have worked if anyone else had been cast as that character.
Anybody else, I don't think, would have been as committed as he is.
Yeah, yeah. What I loved about this movie is, I actually did karate for a few years, and I was just laughing hysterically through this, because it captures, and I'm going to call it what this is, it captures the cult of karate or any martial arts type of institution.
It's like that.
So perfectly. And it's not that, Well, obviously we didn't go around killing people.
I hope not.
But we could. But it captures the dedication it takes to get anywhere, right? So in order to get even marginally good at the art of self-defense, takes a lot of hours and it takes a certain mindset. So you start to sort of like breathe karate. And I think as we were leaving the theater, Joe said, I'm really glad you gave that up, which was really funny to me that you said that, that you would have said that. So I just love how note perfect this is. And I have to tell you, Alessandra Nivola as the sensei, exceptional. I mean, if we could give out awards, best I would be nominating actor. Him for best supporting actor and Jesse Eisenberg for best actor. Although I feel like Jesse Eisenberg wasn't really acting. It's that good a performance. I love that it's very Coen-esque in its humor. And I like how the color's almost drained out of the movie. And it's kind of muted, right? It's kind of this like greeny, grey.
It's very darkly
palette,
lit,
huh?
It's very darkly lit.
Very dimly
very,
lit.
Very, very dimly lit. And yeah, and I would have said exactly that. Fight Club meets The Office is a perfect description for this movie. So I absolutely loved this movie and I can't wait to see it again.
Yeah, I think Riley Stearns either has a thesis and this movie is a very committed way to make his thesis. He has something to say, I think he does, about how you can make somebody do very extreme by kind of taking their weakness at an advantage. So if somebody is very diminutive, if somebody is very lacking in self-esteem, you can weaponize that to make them do things that they would never think of doing.
Yeah.
Either that or like Joe, he's just made this really sinister, dark, you know, he wants to make a comedy. I just liked how committed the movie is. It never once tries to be cutesy. It never once tries to win over your affections. It never tries to kind of snuggle up next to the viewer. It's like, this is the world. And it's odd and it's nasty and it's bone-crunchingly violent. And this is my story.
And it's very minimal.
It's very minimalistic.
It's very minimal and focused in the way that it manages to tell its story and get its point across. Yeah, sorry, I interrupted.
I'm so excited
by this movie.
So it's, I really think this is a cult movie. I mean, it has cult written all over it. Jesse Eisenberg, you know, when you look at him, you know, in any movie he's made, it's a wonder that he's in movies at all. You
know,
he's a very simple looking fella. But there is a particular kind of role which just completely befits him. I mean, he was great as the young Mark Zuckerberg,
yes,
in The Social Network.
Yes.
And in this movie, again, I can't think of any other actor doing this.
Yes.
And he goes with this movie. He never once falters. He goes to the very dark places. And he's believable. I mean, I can totally see that, you know, he would be going through that. And again, Alessandro Nivola has been in so many movies. He was
in
Laurel Canyon
CV.
Like 20
yes.
years ago. And he's always been kind of on the fringes. And I hope a movie like this gets him some recognition, because I would posit that he probably has the hardest role in the movie. If not for him, the movie wouldn't exist.
Probably the hardest role in any movie I've seen this year. I mean, this is a very difficult role to take seriously.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and you never once doubt him. He's very believable in the way that he plays a sensei. And a sensei is a very specific type of person, right? They're kind of the god of the dojo. And that's what I'm saying. Like, it was so authentic in the way around the rules and the bowing and the etiquette. And it was, I was literally belly laughing, right? Because we always belly laugh. The things that make us laugh the most is the truth. And seriously, this is not a million miles from the karate school that I went to.
Well, I remember you had two senseis. You had normal sensei and you
we
had...
We used to call one normal sensei.
The other one was crazy sensei.
No, we used to call him psycho sensei.
Right.
Because you really did think that at any point in time he could murder somebody in class.
And I think it's always...
He was a good teacher too.
He was a great teacher.
He had this intensity about him.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, the intensity of doing something like that, it's very... It's not just about the discipline of doing the task, the fight. It's also the discipline of the etiquette, right? Because that's what's going to help you survive or kill the other person if you're really in that situation. Yeah, and even the whole thing around the board breaking, it just made me laugh. I was literally in stitches.
Yeah, and it's funny that in all of these instances, and you know, it's not just that, you know, the person, the sensei in this case, the master, the class teacher, is not just asking them to give 100% while they're there. They're asking to give 100% of their life at any minute. So that's what's funny, right?
So because that's what it is.
Because it's saying you need to change how you live.
Correct.
And that's a big thing to ask. I mean, I'm almost reminded of Whiplash, the movie, which was about the same, about if you want to be the best in something, then how much are you willing to give?
Right.
And how much are you willing to be abused by your teacher to get you to that place where you wouldn't go on your own? And I should also say that this movie is so odd and it's so deadpan that while I was watching it, I was thinking, well, this is not going to translate for a lot of people. But I was surprised at how much the audience was laughing. So as odd and as weird as it may seem, I think this is actually going to translate very well for people. I just hope enough people go out and see it.
Yeah, and even Imogen, but we haven't mentioned Imogen Poots. She's been in a lot of things recently, and she's really good in this movie as well. This whole thing about gender and expectation and how changing your way of life changes you as a person. To me, this is a movie which is an entire arc. I haven't seen a movie where the arc is so great from beginning to end of a character. It's really, really smart.
And I don't know, maybe it's a bit of a spoiler, but I was wondering why this movie, movie doesn't give any clues initially as to what time period it's set in. And I initially started off thinking it's contemporary, but over a period of time, I realized, you know, people were using these flip phones and...
Yeah, the answering machine. Yeah.
So I figured it's somewhere set in the late 80s, early 90s maybe. And it really works because what the director wants to say, I believe, about gender politics, about a woman trying to make a place for herself in a very masculine environment, such as, you know, a karate class, that sensibility, that way of thinking predates Me Too. It predates, you know, our current thinking a little bit. So I think that might be one of the reasons why it's set in that particular time period. But yeah, Imogen Poots, you know, she's a great actor and we've seen her in so much and she has a wonderful name. I love Imogen Poots. How can you forget that name? But she plays somebody who has internalized the sexism to believe that a woman is lesser than a man and must find her place, therefore, underneath a man in this hierarchy. And she's trying to fight it, but kind of believes it. There's all these things happening subterraneously in the movie. So, and I must say, it has the cutest dog.
Yes.
It has the cutest little, was it a dachshund?
I don't know.
Yeah. I think it was a dachshund,
It was so cute.
As your cute dog sits underneath our Moviewala's table.
Best dog.
Yes, she's lovely. Oh, she's giving me kisses.
Not my dog, the dog in the movie.
No, sorry, I was talking about your dog. Your dog is lovely. Yes, lovely.
There's also a not-so-cute dog in the movie.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about the not-so-cute dog. Yeah. Yes.
Okay, wrap this one up.
I'm going to give it, I think, what is somewhat stingy 8 out of 10, and I only do that because I think you know this movie has layers to it that I didn't quite get at. I viewed it as a very twisted little piece of dark satire, I guess, didn't really understand any of its underlying messages, but nonetheless it was very satisfying because, like you said, Rashmi, the character's journey is so complete. It's a really fun ending. We get to explore these really offbeat, bizarre characters that within the confines of this universe have absolute integrity. I mean, none of it comes out of left field. You know, everything kind of goes, yeah, okay, that's what would happen in that situation if you put those characters together. So I liked it very, very much. But I must admit, I don't know that this movie is for everyone. It's definitely one of the more difficult recommendations I have to make, but very funny indeed.
Yes,
yeah, I think this one's for the ages. I really hope as long as enough people see it, I think it'll get a cult status, and I think enough people need to see it. I've been kind of telling people when they ask me what movie to watch, I've been telling them to go watch The Art of Self-Defense. And I love that it's on the surface one thing, and on the bottom there's so many other things you can comment on. I mean, I think it's very difficult to convey in a film this kind of Stockholm syndrome kind of feeling where somebody is controlling you and somebody is abusing you and they're doing horrible things to you, and yet you're seeking greater affirmation from them. And in this case, the person is doing really terrible things, and yet you continue to follow that person. And a lot of people are in these sick kind of twisted relationships, and it kind of really gets to the bottom of that. There's so much going on in this movie. I really hesitate to give it a 9 out of 10, but it's an 8.5 out of 10, which should go up to a 9, but...
Do it!
Okay, a 9 out of 10, fine.
Yay!
Because it's such a little movie by an unknown actor, by unknown director, and it really needs the... It needs the...
It needs the 9. It deserves a 9.
It needs the attention, yeah.
Mash me.
Go see.
Yeah.
The Art of Self-Defense.
This brought back very, very... funny and scary memories for me. The desire to win a little label on your belt, and what you have to go through to win that or get that or earn that. Bone crunchingly brilliant. This is easily a 9 out of 10 for me. Mm. Easily. Fantastic movie.
Movie number 2 of the week then is The Farewell. So,
I'll introduce that. Farewell. So The Farewell is written and directed by Lulu Wang. And Lulu Wang...
That's a great name.
Yes. Lulu Wang? I don't know. Lulu Wang... I'm going to keep saying Lulu Wang.
I know.
By the way, I've heard...
How many times can we say... It could be a drinking game. How many times can you say Lulu Wang?
I've been reading and hearing a lot of her interviews. She was on NPR. She was on Fresh Air. And it was interesting. She's made one other movie before called Posthumous. Oh. And it stars somebody who we really like, Britt Marling, and Jack Huston. It's a movie we haven't seen. And so this is her sophomore movie. And it was interesting on NPR, she mentioned... So Lulu Wang, if you look her, she looks like she's in her early 30s, if that, maybe even younger. And she said that she spent her early part of her career working for an insurance company, which was dealing with people who had had a mental trauma and had, you know, were unable to function. So it was her job to go to these homes and kind of interact with these people and film them while they're making breakfast or while they're talking and kind of see how, you know, their life might have changed. And she says that in a way prepared her to observe human nature more carefully and to see where things might deviate from what you might expect in a given situation. And I think that probably served her well as a filmmaker. So this particular movie is very, very autobiographical. It's based on her own experience as a 20-something second-generation immigrant who was born in China, came to the United States when she was 9 years old, along with her parents, grew up. And when she was 20-some years old, she found out that her grandmother in China was dying of cancer and she had very few months to live. And she, along with her parents, went on a visit to China to see her grandmother. And the crux of the movie is that her family decides not to tell her grandmother that she is dying. And instead, they kind of conjure up this false pretext of one of her cousins getting married and, you know, use that as a pretext for all of the family to get there so they can meet with the grandmother. So the movie is pretty much that story. And I understand that she was having difficulty getting this movie made. So she actually went to This American Life on NPR and did an essay where she kind of spoke about this experience when she went to China. And then that allowed the right producers to reach out to her and get the money for it.
Wow.
So like I said, it's written and directed by her, and the movie stars Awkwafina, who we know of course from Crazy Rich Asians. We know her from
Ocean's
movies, and actually she won the best at the San Diego Asian Film Festival. She had a movie called Bad Rap, which won the best movie.
I forgot she was in that.
Long time ago, like 3 or 4 years ago, here in San Diego. So
yeah.
My, how far she's come. It stars Awkwafina, as the main protagonist, playing Lulu Wang's character. And then her parents are played by Zima and Diana Lin. And then the grandmother is played by Xu Zhenzhao. And that's pretty much it. This movie got a lot of fanfare out of Sundance, and it's now opened wide. What do you guys think of The Farewell?
Welcome to my favorite movie of the year. I can't shake this one, not just because of Awkwafina's incredible acting and, you know, let's put her on the list for best actress, but because I felt like I really got to know this family and its culture and sensibility, and that's incredibly hard to do in less than 2 hours.
Yeah, this is this is a very touching movie, and you know, Rashmi and I kind of had done a double bill that evening, so this was the second movie that we saw. We saw, I think, yesterday, just prior to it. So, you know, this movie was always going to have its work cut out to keep my entertainment my attention, rather, in those kind of circumstances. You know, the only criticism I really have of the movie is that the damn trailer gave away too much of the thing. So the trailer is extraordinarily revealing of it's almost the entire film, you know, condensed into a couple of minutes. So, you know, that robbed me of some of the key moments of the movie. But honestly, it just does that thing that many movies aim for but don't always achieve, which is it brings you into this family, it brings you into this culture, it brings you into this environment and this moment and this decision that this family have made. And you see the decision from everyone's perspective, and it's just done so nicely. I mean, we're all going to be talking about Awkwafina's performance in this at the end of the year, I'm sure. But I felt that everyone else in the movie also supported the story, and it felt almost documentary-like in its. I was there with them on this journey, so. Very, very well handled material. Very, very touching movie. I have a couple of issues with literally the post credit scenes, but other than that, this movie was perfect.
Yazdi.
Yeah, no, I really loved it. I think, you know, it won an audience award out of Sundance, and it's been hyped up a lot, and so I actually worry that a movie as sweet and gentle and authentic as this one might carry too heavy a burden, you know, if somebody's expecting the meaning of life out of it.
Right.
Not that that's not there in it, but I think this movie is so gentle in a way that I just want to warn people that just go with no expectations, go with an open mind. And if there's one thing this movie makes clear, it's that, you know, all families are universal. This is a very specific story about a very specific person. You know, she's second generation Chinese living in the United States. And yet it is my story. It is your story. It's everybody's story about how...
Great point.
And it's not just about, you know, at the center of the movie is the relationship with the grandmother. But the movie is so beautifully written, and, you know, a lot of it is autobiographical and real, is that it speaks about how parents treat their, you know, young adults, how young adults interact with their parents, how, you know, when you're a certain age, you're trying to kind of get away from the confines of your parents. And especially if you're an immigrant in this country, you're constantly playing this, you know, seesaw between your commitment to honor and respect your culture and yet kind of assert yourself as a human being. And it never, ever at any moment deems to find any of the characters as bad people. And that's what I really like. I mean, this is what the Japanese director, Hirokazu Koreeda, who did Shoplifters, he's the only other director I know who never treats any of the people as bad people or villains. Everybody is the way they are, and nobody inherently means bad to anybody else, but it's just the situation which creates all these conflicts. So it would be one thing if this movie was just written by her, which is the screenplay is brilliant, but I think that she also directed it, and the direction is so authentic. It all feels real. Nobody feels like, you know, they're a bad actor. There's no weak link here. And it's, you know, it's a pretty big ensemble. Mm-hmm. Uncles and aunts and cousins and grandmother and
extended family.
Extended family. Yeah. And it's all put together very well.
Yeah, what I loved is that it explains so wonderfully the tapestry of families, mm-hmm. and the rituals and the difference between East and West thinking. Having parents of Indian descent and growing up in a Western country, there's always this push and pull, right? Like you said, Yazdi, of what they want and what they believe, and yet they've left that behind, right? So they leave what they know, but they want to carry it, yet they go for a reason. And I think for the first time, there's just this beautiful explanation of the difference between Eastern and Western thinking, and how in the East, everything is a collective. It's more than just being about the self. And yet in the West, it's very much about being about the self. And at that point, I lost it. I was literally like bawling my eyes out. I mean, it's not a movie that's going to, you know, like have you on the edge of your seat around. It's not too emotional, is what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. It's very well realized. And it's actually, again, the truth that really is the piece that gets under your skin, especially if you have that experience or know people who have had that experience growing up.
I mean, this is a very weighty premise, right?
Yeah.
The grandmother is,
yeah,
is terminally ill, and the family, through cultural norms and a sense of
burden,
them, yeah, wanting to not burden that person with the information that she, yeah, is dying, and almost take that on themselves. You know, this could be a very, very heavy, depressingly dark,
yeah,
movie. And it reminds me, remember the movie that did very well critically? It was about the memory loss, the French movie.
Amour,
yes.
Where that movie was so dark and heavy, you know, this movie never had that kind of level of weight, right? You know, the whole family is faced with losing somebody that's very dear, a matriarch of the family, and yet this movie, for me, never went to this kind of darkly emotional place. We understood the reasons for the deception and sympathized with something that personally I would find horrific. Like, you know, if that was my situation, I would want to know. But at the same time, you kind of you get the family's decision. Yeah. So
I see that in my family in India all the time. If somebody is ill, they won't tell him, because they're like, well, what's the point? It's just going to make them more anxious. It's, yeah, just going to make them, you know, or you know, let this person finish their exams and then we'll tell this bad news or whatever, you know. And it's, I just, like, from where I am with my current thinking, I just find it unethical, wrong, all of those things. But within their context, it is actually an act of great generosity. And correct, they see it, yeah, that way. And you can judge it either way. And I think that's what the movie really does. It's not taking sides. One is better than the other. So I really like that. I also like the fact that, you know, much has been made about Awkwafina's performance, and she plays this very strong-willed person. I personally found her, I don't know if it's her as an actor or if the way her role is written, I found her a little opaque in terms of what she wants. I mean, you don't really get to know her except through her relationships with everybody else. I didn't get to know her as a person, but it's fine. It's she's very, very good in it. She's remarkable.
I think that's the point of the movie, Yazdi. I think that she is a millennial,
right,
who is of, you know, of Chinese descent in the US, raised as an American, and living this life. And who are you when you have all of that burden and all of that weight of generations, in a sense? So I think it's beautifully portrayed because she is opaque. I don't think she as a character knows who she is. And I think,
yeah,
through this,
so, yeah,
journey is kind of figuring out what's important, not necessarily who you are, but the values that are imbued upon us or endowed, yeah, upon us by our families. Do we want them or do we not want them?
Yeah, there's
and
a wonderful,
I think it's kind of an evaluation of that. It's stunning. Like, everything about it is stunning.
There's a great montage in the movie where she after she comes back to the US and she's interacting with all her usual friends, they almost hold no meaning.
Correct.
It's all like background noise because of she's so connected with what's happened in China. But I think the one person who, I mean, it's beautiful. Her parents are wonderfully portrayed.
Perfect.
Her uncle does this one speech, which is just amazing.
Yeah.
But I think the one person who really impressed me was the actor who played her grandmother. And that's a very difficult role.
Absolutely.
And she is just right. I don't know what else to say. She's just right. I mean, you understand why she's so beloved. And you understand why, by her status as the matriarch of the family, she gets away with saying a lot of things, which... If she didn't say it in a charming way, it would be like bruisingly cutting. But she says her things, you know, and we know people like that who are beloved, but they just say what they want to everybody.
I have an aunt like that. That's what Joe's mouthing to me across the table. No,
and she's one of my favorite people in the world.
Yeah, she's Joe's favorite aunt of mine.
Yeah,
but, and she's brutally honest. Like, she's the sort of person...
Disarmingly so, I mean.
Disarmingly. Like, you will walk in the door and she'll say, oh, you're so fat.
Right, exactly. Or you've put on so much weight or whatever. Yeah,
but equally she'll say, I love your hair.
Right, right.
Not so much.
So I think it would have been so easy for this movie to devolve into caricature, to devolve into a cheap comedy, to devolve into... a Disney movie to become very dark.
It's none of those.
It's funny. It's authentic. It's real.
Just the scene in the cemetery. There's this amazing scene in the cemetery where they're paying respect to a dead grandfather. Right. It's one of the best scenes in the movie, and nothing really happens.
It's all the dialogue,
but it's the way that it all happens, the way it all unfolds, and again the rituals and how each character observes that ritual. It's just stunning. Just that one scene, I just made the movie for me.
Yeah, I'm almost afraid to make too much of this movie. I want everybody to... It's a small movie. I'm really happy. It started only at the Landmark Cinemas, but it's already opened out. And now it's playing at the more mainstream cinemas. I want everybody to watch this movie.
That sounds like something else.
And experience it. I really love this movie. 8.5 out of 10, which I'm going to back down to an 8, unfortunately.
How?
I know, but it's a treasure. It's a gem. It's a movie I want to hug and hold. I'm going to see it again. And it's going to be on my year-end top 10 list.
Joe?
9, easily. I mean, I think, again, this kind of material could end up being, you know, manipulative or overly sentimental, and... it does none of that. It just it transports you to play. Again, it really felt like a documentary here. You know, so you know, the fact that for its authenticity, I think it's just it's up there for me. The one thing that will really stand out for me is Awkwafina's performance here, because you know, it was talked about, you know, quite heavily before going into the movie. So I had quite a lot of expectations on that, and it just felt so genuine. Yeah, I didn't not believe her for like 1 second of the movie. It's really hard for me to connect this Awkwafina with the, you know, the comedic Asian, crazy rich Asian stereotypical, you know, crazy Awkwafina and the bad rap Awkwafina. So it and the Ocean's Awkwafina, where she's, you know, playing again the stereotypical Asian sidekick. So, you know, to see her play this so naturally was wonderful. 9 out of 10. I loved it too.
Well, because I like to use the entire scale of the scoring system.
No!
I'm giving this a 10.
No.
This one will stay with you long after you've said goodbye to it.
Wow.
Stunning. Stunning movie.
It's 100% on the tomato meter.
It's 100%. Just stunning. I can't think of one scene that was superfluous or badly done. There's a wonderful wedding that takes place and a wedding reception. It's hilarious. I mean, you know, we've all been to weddings like that, family weddings and parties where, you know, people get too much to drink and fantastic.
I knocked my 1 point off, sorry to interrupt, Yeti, but for the post-credit scene. I think for me...
It deflated some of the emotional build-up for me as well. I know what you're talking about.
Correct.
Yeah.
So I think...
Bah, humbug.
Like when the title...
We can't talk about it.
When the end title card appears, leave. you'll have a better experience.
But. we can talk about it afterwards. Okay. Yeah, there's one other thing I wanted to say, but that's also a spoiler, so yeah, I don't want to. Yeah. Yeah, but people need to go out. People need to seek out this movie. They need to seek out The Art of Self-Defense. Everybody who complains that there's nothing good in cinemas and it's all crappy stuff, these are the good movies.
This is non-sequelitis.
Right.
Non-franchise.
This is original, authentic,
fantastic, good material.
Small
what
movies.
A good week.
Yes.
Nines and tens for both movies.
Yes,
that time of year. Things are going to start ramping up as we head into the third and fourth quarters. So great.
Farewell.
Well, stick
farewell,
with us.
Farewell, Joe.
And don't say farewell to us as we as we wrap up the podcast. Do let us know what you think of these movies. Mail at moviewallers.com.
Go see them.
Yeah, in fact, don't write to us. Just go see the movies.
Go see them.
Yeah.
Do yourself a favor.
And hang out here for our next podcast, which will be coming up in the not-too-distant future. So until our next podcast, too many movies, too little time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.
Farewell.